Welcome one and all. We are discussing tonight the topic of transplants. We're going to start with a few words of disclaimer. I am not a doctor. I do not play one on TV. So I note that many of the people here are, and I don't pretend to have any more medical knowledge. To the extent that I make a mistake, please correct me. Because, again, whatever I'm going on, my knowledge is secondhand at best, and it also may very well be dated. So based on when most of the literature was written. So if things have changed, or if I'm just confused, or a blithering idiot, please don't be shy about the sharing that with me. Patty, we don't have to tell you, but everybody else also can jump in as they see fit. Basically, there's three areas I wanted to discuss tonight. Obviously, this isn't a halach decision. No one should run off and
start doing transplants.
Right, on their own, based on today's lecture. This is just to put out for certain issues, etc. Basically, I wanted to discuss three different areas. The first area is what we will call kidney transplants. Kidney transplants can be given from one live person to another live person. Then you have the area of things that can be given from a dead person to a live person, but the person could be good and dead at that point, and that would be something like a cornea transplant. And then the third area, which we're actually not going to spend a lot of time on, even though it's the one that gets the most literature, is the issues of organs that the person can't be all that dead in order to transfer. Can be a little bit dead, but not so dead. A little bit dead. So when it comes to kidney... What? What does a little bit dead mean? Yeah. So again, that's more of a medical thing, but I think that for example, a heart or lungs or the like, if they're in a dead body for how much time?
Hours.
Yeah.
Right. 10, 15 minutes. Then in 10-15 minutes they become unusable. You can't use them for a transplant. So therefore, when you're going to do a transplant, on a heart transplant or something, you're going to do it with somebody whose heart may be beating.
Very freshly dead.
Right.
Very freshly dead.
Right. That's basically what you're looking for.
It's like Billy Crystal.
Well, but...
Thank you. See, medical school was worthwhile for you.
and it also depends upon your definition of dead.
Correct.
Because you can keep the heart and lungs going after brain
death. That's absolutely... That's... So,
can people actually suffer murder to have their...
So it's interesting. There's, as far as I know, and I'd like to try to get on the topic before I get off it at least, but as far as I know, there is only one country where you can legally sell organs in the world, and that is...
China, Turkey...
Yeah, legally.
Iran.
Correct. Iran is the only country, which is why Iran has a waiting list for kidneys of... zero, right? Then there are other countries where it is illegal to traffic organs, but, you know, sometimes with a wink, they happen. China would be, in terms of just sheer numbers, high on the list, and I think in China they actually harvest organs from prisoners.
Yeah. Apparently they've stopped that in the past year, they claim.
Okay, so up until recently, we'll put it, we'll take them on their word.
They used to have an incredible system.
So again, one, the bottom line is, again, as I said, I'd like to get on the topic before I get off the topic, but say what you want, but Iran might have a point. Just saying that in terms of, given the amount of people who die waiting for organs, one would have to wonder if perhaps there would be some sense in having some sort of legalized method. For,
is it only kidneys with them, or is it all kinds of organs?
Well, again, as far as I know...
kidneys are about the only one you can donate.
Right. Cornea. Yeah. I don't know. But
what about parts of the liver, yeah.
Right. Right, but that's about it. Right, but again, in terms of practically, you know, I think that... Again, liver transplants were on a decline at some point, I remember, because a lot of people were dying. A lot of donors were dying, if I remember correctly.
The donors,
not
very...
What, liver?
Not a lot were dying, but
Too many?
One death, then it shuts down your program for a while.
Right, remember, I think NYU had...
Mount Sinai,
right.
Mount Sinai had a death. And the first death there, after 250 live donors, they had a death. And
how common is
live donation?
Well, yeah, live liver donation.
We do a few a year.
It became more frequent. We also have
But we're doing it again.
Okay, right, so that's... So the question, let's start with kidney, live kidney transplants. And really, the question is my obligation to give someone a kidney. That's what I want to talk about first. Now, the truth of the matter is you can really make an argument across the board here. You can argue anywhere from there's an obligation for me to go and donate a kidney to save someone's life to that it is prohibited for me to donate a kidney to save someone's life due to the risk to myself. Right? So really, that's about as big a spectrum as you can. Have to can't is about as far as we go here. So the Radvaz, who by by several centuries predated the medical question, had a very interesting question, well known. I am pretty sure that this was a theoretical question. It wasn't the practical question. It goes like this. The question is that the king, whatever the local despot was, goes in and he says, you have a choice. Either you allow me to cut off your finger, or I will kill your friend. Do you have an obligation to allow him to cut off your finger? Anybody want to venture?
Yes.
No.
No. Yeah. An obligation, no.
Obligation, no.
Yeah, because you...
Yeah, I got two yes and two no's.
Then you're allowing him to kill your friend.
Well, okay, so you think that you're obligated.
So that's
the question. Now, here's an interesting piece of logic here. So he says, we'll read it quickly. I'm going to cut off a limb that you're not going to die from. Or else I will kill another Jew. Some people say you have to allow them to cut off the non-vital organ. The harai was approved. Me d'amrinim ba'avodah zarah chash be'enav mutal l'chol v'shabbos. Mefarish time mishum d'shiruyeh be'enav b'liba. In the event that someone has some sort of medical emergency regarding their eye, you're allowed to violate Shabbos for it. What's the reason for that? Because the Gemara says that the eye is somehow attached to the heart. I never took anatomy. I'll just take the word for it. Right? Yes.
There is a reflex where if you press on the eye, you actually slow down the heart.
Okay, good to know. Masha, Eva Acharo. So the implication is that the whole reason I'm allowed to violate Shabbos for an optical emergency is because that this could lead to potential death. However, what if I would have an emergency of which I could lose a limb which would not cost me my life? What's the assumption in this Gemara?
You wouldn't violate
Shabbos for it. Okay, that's assumption number one. V'hashi yovo anita mikal v'chomer. So let's think of it now. In the event that someone, let's say my limb is in danger, can I violate Shabbos?
Your what's in danger?
My limb. So
non-vital,
according to this,
non-vital.
You can't. Non-vital limb, I can't. Now, if your life is in danger, can I violate Shabbos for that?
Yes.
Okay, so now let's measure it. Okay, I've got the hierarchy is your life is worth more than Shabbos, which is worth more than my limb. So take Shabbos out of the equation and...
My life is worth more than your limb.
Your life is worth more than my limb.
Thank you, Eti. That is correct. So
same thing.
Right, same thing but the exact opposite. So so in fact, that's the idea. So it's clearly... The assumption here is that your life is more important than my limb, and therefore I would have to give my limb to save your life. That's the question that we have here. So is that true? So the Radvaz writes as follows. Again, as far as I know, no government official is doing this. This is theoretical. Shuva, zem midas chasidus. This is something that if you want to give your limb to save us, that's very nice. That's very admirable. Aval adin yesh tshuva. But if you want to know whether you have to, nah, that's not a good... Why? onus to osi mishmaya. Well, that's a little different, right? There's a difference between if a person ends up with some sort of eye ailment, right, versus he has some other ailment which threatens his. So where did that come from? That was not brought upon. He didn't have an option. That just fell into his lap. But that's very different than saying, I have to give up a limb actively. So he said he doesn't totally buy this. But that I have to go and give it up, that's different. There's no such thing, he says, also as a non-vital organ. You chop a guy's finger off, he could bleed out.
Or get an infection and die.
Right. So to say that you're just going to cut off a limb and that's that, no, there's always risk there. Why is his blood redder than yours? Maybe your blood's redder than his. I saw a guy, he got his ears pierced and he died from it. Right? So he gives many reasons to explain why this Kal V'chomer does not exist. One reason for it, by the way, is it's far from clear that a person does not violate Shabbos to save a limb. That's the assumption of the question. That may not be a true assumption.
And a limb can also include a finger or a toe.
Correct.
Correct.
So according to the Radvaz,
according to his conclusion, you would almost say you have to violate Shabbos for a limb because theoretically it can be...
Correct. Well, that is true. I will come if someone has...
Sometimes it's nefashis, right?
Right. Again, if there's... even if it's a long shot risk to life, we are quick to violate Shabbos for any possibility, any reasonable possibility of...
Just allowed to violate, but maybe mechuyev to violate.
Correct. Absolutely. So now let's take this Radvaz and apply it to our case, right? This sounds like an oddball case, but let's compare right now. Somebody needs a kidney. Lucky day, I've got two of them, right? If I lose a kidney, right, will I die from that? Highly unlikely. Highly unlikely that a person will, right? My understanding is that the studies over the years have showed that there's basically no difference in the mortality rate of people who have given up a kidney and those who haven't given up a kidney.
Again, you're eliminating the risk of the surgery itself.
Very slight.
Right. Minimal.
I don't remember the percentage, but there's a new study that shows that there is a very slight increase.
Okay. So.
Even if you exclude the risk of the procedure... Mm-hmm. Which is not zero.
Correct.
If you should develop an infection in your one remaining kidney, severe enough to impair your function, you don't have another kidney to rely on.
You're giving up your backup. You're giving up your spare tire.
Yeah.
That's exactly.
You need a transplant.
Right. That's it. You know, God's spare tire has been. So that's right. So there is a certain degree of risk, but not a major amount of risk. Clearly, comparing the amount of risk that the donor has compared to the amount of risk that the receiver has, right? If he doesn't get one, it's not nearly comparable. So what would you say in this case? So according to, you would say that the Radvaz seems to be very applicable here, right? Because what did the Radvaz say that you can't give up your finger?
I said, midas tzidus.
Right, so would he say it's a good idea?
If you want to be a chassid.
Right. So again, so he seems to be saying that if you're man or woman enough to go and give up a finger to save this guy's life, that's great.
But you're not obligated.
But you're not obligated to do it, right? So if we would apply that to the case of the kidney. So again, like if the person gives a limb, there is a certain amount of risk, not a great amount of risk, but you're arguably saving a person's life. So the idea is, do you have to donate a kidney?
No.
Are you allowed to donate a kidney?
Yes.
If you do, is that do we think highly of you?
Yes.
Takes them to feel highly of Hasidim, right? So that, in fact, is... So Rav Avadi Yosef, he's one of several responses on the topic. He just happens to be a very good one because he collects the other opinions. He says as follows, Sheila, question, Chola Klayos, someone has kidney disease, but often Ritzini, serious. He's gotten to the point that it's really a matter of his life's in danger. Im rashai chaver or korav mishpach litrom lo kliya achas mikhil Yosef kedei rahatzo chaye chaverom. Can a friend or a member of the family donate a kidney or to save the life? Oh, mikhaven she'efshe she'yesh b'zak sasa chara tarim. Or do you say, since perhaps there is a certain amount of risk that the donor takes it on themselves, ein lo hachnis asmo b'sofek sakona afilo amenas rahatzo es chaverom mivare sakona. Do we say that I'm not allowed to put myself to risk my life, even if it means to risk your life? Now again, this goes beyond medical, right? Someone's drowning. If you jump in to save the person, and if you throw the person a life preserver, there's no risk to you, basically. Right? But if you, they always tell you, you ever take your swimming classes, the first thing you got to worry about is the guys can drag you down as well. So let's say I don't have a life preserver. I'm walking down the street. I left my life preserver at home. It's in my other pants. Whatever it is, right now here I am, and a person is drowning. And if I jump in, right? So I know how to swim, right? But you know there is a certain amount of risk. So the question is, do I have to jump in? Am I allowed to jump in? Yeah. Right. So that's the question here as well. You know, do I have a right to take upon myself this risk? So Rav Avadia says as follows: Etzem hadin im rashai adam o chayiv lahachnis b'sofek sakana kedei rahatzel as chaveri meivare sakana. The general question of whether I can put myself into a potential dangerous situation to save someone else from a definitely dangerous situation. Shani b'machlokas aposkim. This is an old machlokas. Yerushalmi says something amazing. You are obligated to put yourself into potential danger to save someone who's definitely in danger. Now, according to this Yerushalmi, it's a primary source, would you be allowed to give a kidney? Would you have to? It would seem that according to this, so again, that's very interesting. You seem to see that you've got to put yourself into a potentially to save someone else. So that should be the end of it, right? Okay.
That source.
Okay.
That the person who's in danger is allowed to save their friend. Define chaveiro. What is the nature of the relationship?
Fellow Jew. Even if you hate his stinking guts. Okay. So, and the Shulchan Aruch explains that the logic behind this is obvious. If we're looking at the greater Jewish people, right, risking the potential danger to potentially pick up, right, the odds of me losing two lives at the end of this, whatever the danger to the one guy is. But the odds of me walking out with two lives is much better. So that would be the logic behind this. Like Rav Avadia tends to do, he gives a whole long list, a laundry list of people who support this. Ulam, skipping down, Hasma, v'lachosh mishpam heyer shemaron ha-machaber v'harama hishmitu din zemi ha-shulchan aruch. However, if you open a shulchan aruch, you know where you're going to find this?
Nowhere.
Even though the Rishami says this, no one quotes it as a matter of normative halacha. But Tama Fisha Gedolia Poskim, Arif, Rambam, Rosh Hashmit, to Devar Rishami. They weren't the first ones to that. You know where you're going to find it in the Rambam? You're not. The Rif, the Rush. All of the standard sources for setting what is the law all leave this out. So the silence is deafening, I say. Rabbeinu Yonah didn't leave it out. He quoted it and said, we don't follow that. So even though this would be a very important source, this is not a source that we accept.
And the Bavli doesn't deal with it at all?
The Bavli does not deal with it straight out, but the Bavli does kind of deal about it in a backwards way. A very famous case. Two guys are in the desert.
One bottle of water.
One bottle of water. And he says, why are you holding a car door? He said, in case it gets too hot, I'll open the window. So, but no, that's your Shelby. So, right? So the two guys are in the desert. There's one bottle of water. We could split it.
And both will die.
And both will die with a smile on our face, or one can drink it. So there's two opinions in the Gemara about that, and we seem to follow the opinion that
one should drink it.
Right, now let me ask you this question, though. Assuming one guy drinks it and the other guy doesn't drink it, the guy will be able to survive, let's say, another 2 days, and he'll make it to the nearest town. Right? I assume that's what the case is. If they both would drink it,
nobody gets there.
They would each survive one day where they would make it closer to the town. There would be a possibility that in that day they would run into a ice cream truck.
An oasis.
An oasis. Starbucks,
travel
very good chance. Right?
Habano.
So putting those possibilities out there, right, one could argue, well, maybe I should take on a certain amount of risk for myself in order that we could both potentially make it. So that Gemara may be related to this. That's the closest we have in the Bavli, as far as I know. But that one could argue that's a different case, obviously. And also the amount of risk is significantly different. So that's the story. The story is that if we would follow the Yerushalmi, then clearly a person would be obligated to give a kidney, right? In all these other cases, but we don't. So based on this, there's three dots. We skipped a lot. Ayisoda dvaramanal, Don Hagon Rav Yitzchak Yaakov Weiss, Rav Asbetan Arida Charedis, Vashut Milchas Yitzchak, Rasa Ritram Kriya Rechole Vecholeyan Shinishkva Rosakana. Based on this, Dayan Weiss passed away, I think, 1990, 1991, very early in the 90s. He was for many years the rabbi in Manchester, England. He moved to Yerushalayim, he became the head of the Eidah Charedis. He said, you're not allowed to give a kidney.
Who is this again?
Diane Weiss.
So,
Diane. Yes.
I gotcha.
So he said that, in fact, because a person does not have a right to bring the sakana upon himself, and therefore you're not allowed to give one.
When was he 19th? No, so he's a contemporary. In those days, they could do kidney.
Well, again, he passed away 25 years ago. Okay, he left 10 volumes of tshuvas. This is volume 6.
So this may have changed.
Right. So what I'm saying is, in these cases, these are all dates are important because clearly the risk has gone down precipitously over the years. So he says that.
Surgery or the risk of long term?
Both. What?
Long term risk may not have, but the surgical risk clearly changed because in the 1980s you were doing an open dissection. Now you're doing.
Yeah, the surgical
risk
is reduced
drastically. Right. Also, again, the fact is when did we start doing kidney transplants? When was the first one? 60s, okay? What? 50s, 60s, right? So again, if we're talking about the 70s here, you didn't really know what the long-term prognosis was. It could also be. It could be that it was always good, but they didn't know about it at the time. Right? And now again, we're 50 years out, you know? You have good numbers. It could also, it's not just a matter of there was greater risk, but there was also greater uncertainty in those days. That becomes important as well. So he quotes that. So that's the opinion of Diane Weiss. He said, A, there's the risk of time. B, as Dr. Jacob said, who knows? He just very well might need that second kidney. Right, v'nimshah shatara machnas atzmo l'sofek sakana. So there's risk because of that as well. V'chein lo yaseh v'dasa radvaz. V'chein lo hagon Rabbi Elezer Yehuda Waldenberg. Avish Mishayim b'sifar shu tzitzel yezer. Al yisod divrei aposkim. V'al smach divrei harofim sh'omu ro sh'maisa ho'tzot z'chia achas m'chliosov shatom korach b'sakana nefashos. He was told by the doctors of Waldenberg that there is potential mortal danger to the donor. Again, well, that's true. There's also potential mortal danger in crossing the street. Right? It's the fact that it's potentially dangerous, that's not arguable. The question is, though, there has to reach a certain level that we are concerned about it. Right? There's definitely a certain amount of load crossing the street, but that being said, everyone's hopefully going to go home tonight. So that's why it's very hard to say, if you ask me, is there danger? Absolutely there's danger in doing this, but there's danger in just about everything. I might have to hear the just about also. Like getting up in the morning is dangerous. That's right. Thank you, Doctor. So, he said, until you're sure that there's no risk. So again, you know, no risk can't mean no risk.
It just means minimal risk.
Right. Vajja says, my understanding is that the risk is very minimal. Now, clearly, Rav Avi is writing this later than them, because he's quoting them. 99% of them go back to their normal. I heard that the complications is 1 in 3,000 when I looked it up. That was the number I saw. What the source for that is, I don't know. But, okay. There you have it. So it's 99.7% of, right? So he thinks that's good enough. He says, if there's a serious, right, danger, then you can't get involved. He says, not only are you allowed to do it, it's a mitzvah. You save a guy's life. That's a big mitzvah. And he quotes from the Radvaz, as we did earlier. He said, to the extent that you can save a person, whatever you can do, you're encouraged to do. Skipping to the last paragraph. You're allowed to do it, and it's very admirable. It's a mitzvah. And any risk that's involved, the mitzvah will protect you from it.
But he stopped short of saying that you're obligated.
He did not say you're obligated at all. That is correct. Try to do this by a good some guy named Eddie in the alley. Don't give him your kidney. So that's the idea. I think that probably is the opinion that we follow. Are you obligated to do it? No. No one's going to tell you that you have to do it. Is it a good thing to do? We think it's a good thing to do. Yes?
Does the secretion of the body come into play here? Cutting into the body unnecessarily?
No, it's absolutely necessary. You're going to save a life.
Cutting a finger off.
It's going to save someone's life?
But is the separation of the body only for dead people?
No. Again, a person is not allowed to randomly harm themselves. Right? So one could argue what randomly harming yourself is. Right? Anything that's a medical necessity, clearly it is allowed.
Isn't that why there's some people?
Cosmetic surgery, on the other hand, that one could argue quite vigorously, is not something that is medically necessary. So there's a lot of gray areas. Some people say, you know, the girl doesn't get a nose job, she's never going to get married. So that
you like that example.
What?
You like that example?
So that is something that's one could argue necessary. There are people, on the other hand, who will get up and tell you that fertility, surgery for fertility is not necessary because you can live fine without it.
Because what?
You can live fine without it.
Oh.
Right? Your woman's got stuff fallopian tubes. No one ever died from stuff fallopian tubes. other people, I think majority, would disagree. Yes?
Well, I don't know if I would use the word desecration of the body when you're donating an organ. It's really, you're donating, you know, it's a surgical procedure. It's not desecration. It's not like you're mutilating the body.
It's not a tattoo. You're not putting on a kidney ring. Okay.
You're not doing any decorations.
Yes.
In light of what Rabbi Vadya wrote.
Yes.
99%. Based on those numbers, liver would be okay as well.
Yeah.
Okay. It's very interesting. I would not take this as the cutoff, right? It's interesting. A lot of times these numbers are kind of thrown around, you know. So, for example, when it comes to this was important dealing with the agunas of 9/11. So, how exact does the DNA have to be? So it says afil echad mine elef. So echad mine elef means 99.9%. So that was really a number that we went with. Here, when he says it's 99%, so again, he says the doctors say it's 99% good. And if the doctors would have said 98%, would he say it's a problem? Right? Did they really tell him 99? Did they say 99.42? Again, the number seems a little bit, you know.
Out of the air.
Correct.
The error.
Right, but I think a lot, if I had to come up with a number, mm-hmm. I would defer on that. But what I would say is as follows, is I'd say it probably has to do with how nervous people get. When it becomes run-of-the-mill rote and people are nervous, then it's not a problem. If people really feel that they're in danger, I think that's an issue. And again, I'm not on top of the liver. Right? I remember there was this issue years back. You know, I assume it's changed, as everything does.
But it's still a bigger risk than kidney. And depending upon whether it's a left lateral segment or a left lobe, it makes a big difference in risk also.
Right.
That's why parents donating to their kids is a much lower risk than
right. If I would guess, I would probably say that at this point, this is a guess, I would say that liver is allowed. Same thing, obviously not obligatory. You know, if it's a family member, you want to do it. You know, go to the best place possible, but you can do it.
Is there any kind of a trade-off that now says, okay, so let's imagine you're going to donate. And then, so what is the probability that the person that I donate to is now going to make it, going to live? Is there a number? I mean, what do the numbers have to be there? I mean, there's a guy that's going to die. You know for sure he's going to die.
Right. But I don't know if he gets a kidney, if he's going to survive.
If you give him a kidney, so maybe his probability of success living is...
The guy who's drowning and you jump in to save him... He may not make it. I mean, you know, you pull him out and he got aspirated enough water.
It's certainly not
100%. Get hit by a truck the next day.
Yeah.
Not 100%. So the question is, what number do you really have to have on the other side?
What's the percentage?
To make this thing worthwhile?
I'll just throw out there. So would I violate Shabbos for this guy if he's definitely going to die if I don't, and he may or may not survive?
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely without a question. Absolutely without a question.
Yeah, but
you're saying there's no downside?
Yeah,
on behalf of God, I take issue with that. But
what you're talking about over here is that from a halachic point of view, you're allowed to do this.
Right.
Here you're now talking about, essentially what is a reshus.
Remember, the word we're using is mitzvah.
What?
It's not reshus, it's mitzvah.
Okay, yeah, but still.
Not chiyuv.
It's not a chiyuv.
Well, I agree, I'll give you that.
But what about on the other side? Is there any thinking about, okay, so let's imagine
you would assume there has to be 51.
I don't know. I think you're being more machin than I am. I think there's a 30% chance he'll survive.
Better than that.
Right. Who knows? Maybe the guy has other problems also. Maybe it's his heart disease as well. I don't know the guy. But, right. But I'm saying, I don't think for 30%, I think we would also. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm definitely not, I'm not looking to put a number down here.
Yeah, but it's interesting. I mean, I'm just.
Right. Again, I assume. But let's say the guy, let's say the odds of him surviving is 10%. Okay? And the odds of you having complication is 0.25%.
Yeah.
you'd have a problem with that?
I'm not sure. I don't know.
I'm down pretty low.
Even if it's a tenth of a percent, to do this voluntary mitzvah, let's call it.
It's my
not
dad.
Obligatory mitzvah. Your dad, maybe it's a bigger mitzvah. But this is a stranger.
I want to do it more.
He's a fellow Jew. So in that sense, it's a mitzvah. But if it's less likely that he's going to live, even though you go through this, than he's not, then why would you do it?
Let me ask you this one. Forget halacha. Let's put halacha aside for a moment. Okay? Let's say this is my kid. My kid, okay? The kid's definitely going to die, but if I do this, the kid's got a 10% chance.
You do it. In a heartbeat.
Right?
Yeah.
So you're telling me I'm not...
Now there's a distinction between one potential...
No, but...
I'm not saying that.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying, but once that's in mind, I'm surprised that you're telling me that I'm not allowed to do it.
If it's not going to help, what are you doing?
It's not going to help.
It might help. Let's assume you have someone with liver disease who's going to die within the next 2 weeks, for sure. And they now have a 10% to take it.
Right.
I mean, it's much higher than 10%.
Right.
You've gone from certain death in 2 weeks to a 10% chance
of living happily ever after.
For
but
I may have asked for
some chance of him dying anyway.
Yeah.
I keep looking at the 10%, 5%. I'm looking at the 95. The 90%
right.
Is going to die regardless of what you've done. Now you've only got one kidney. And you didn't make it.
A certain size when it's going to die.
No. This is a theological discussion at this point.
Your kidney.
Yes.
Why doesn't it fall under the category of pikuach nefesh when all is said and done? And then
the problem is there's pikuach nefesh on both sides here. There's pikuach nefesh, obviously, for the recipient, but there's pikuach nefesh for the donor as well.
Right, the risk is the risk is low for the donor.
It's low, but on the one hand, the donor is readily taking upon himself the risk, or herself the risk, even though, as opposed to the other person who, this wasn't his choice or her choice.
So I'll skew the numbers the other way.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens now if a donor, for whatever the reason is, if he donates his kidney, his risk of dying is 85%.
Yes.
What would happen if I skewed the numbers the other way? You're skewing the numbers one way. I'll skew it the other way. So now I say if the donor now...
I'll tell you, if the guy's got over a 50% chance of not making it, he's not allowed to do it.
That's implicit in Rabbi
Elijah.
It's
implicit. Right. Okay. I'm going to say.
Okay,
so that's why. You skewed that way. It's easy for me.
That's what you would say.
But let me go to the back row for a little bit. Yes. What about stem cells?
Yes.
Yes.
You and I both know about this.
Yes, yes. I think if a person needs your stem cells, what's the risk to a stem cell donor? Oh, I just have the arms.
And then they run your blood through all the
machines. But what about the week before it ends?
What about the Neupogen shot?
Yes. Is that that week? I see you've gotten it out of your mind already. I haven't.
Your
lab
test.
Okay.
There's stuff you have to be put through.
But really, the risk is very, very low for a stem cell donor.
So again, I've had this question come up to me. Is a person obligated to donate stem cells? Why not? If there's basically no risk.
Yes.
Again, a person... But again, if the person's drowning, I'm wearing the pants with the life. I throw it in. Am I allowed to stand by and not throw it in?
No.
So why is this different? Why can't that? Why am I not required to give the stem cells? I agree. I think that's a good idea. As an attorney, I think that's a great idea, actually. But you can't just be stopping people in the street and doing procedures on them. Right, but I'm saying that someone comes over to me. I've had this question a few times. I was at one of these things, gift of life, bone marrow things. I never thought about it. I gave my, you know, I was giving blood anyhow, so I said, take a few drops off, you know, check it out. Next thing I know, here I am. I'm in Israel. I'm in Kollel. I got my wife. I got my kids. There's somebody in America now whose life I can change. Do I have to go get on the plane, fly to America, leave my family for a week or two, and save this person's life? Or can I say, sorry, yeah, I wish you the best. I'll say a kapitel tehillim for you. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm sorry. This is just too much of a bother for me.
You're a great guy.
That's the type of guy I am. Right? I'll put your name on the Mishnah Berurah list. So why do you think the person doesn't have to fly in?
Why they don't? Well, first of all, here in Israel,
they
donate in Israel, but that's
the same.
The Kol Ofen Tioreti.
Okay.
The only machine is in Manhattan.
Right, or whatever. They need it fresh.
There's no obligation.
Why not? Do people agree with this?
I don't.
Yeah.
No.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Well, that's where you come to.
I
understand. Yeah, I'm not. This isn't a personal attack, though.
You can't say to somebody, but you're enmeshed, I'm sorry that you don't want to do this, but you have to.
Why can't you?
Can you, by Jewish law?
That's my question here. Right? So I'm saying here is the only reason I'm laying the kidney donor out of this is because there's some risk involved. If you tell me the stem cell donor has no risk, why is that different than the guy who's drowning and I've got a life preserver? I've got the only life preserver in the world. And I decide, you know what? I'd love to throw it in and pull you out, but I have a lunch meeting coming up. This is, the bachelorette is ending. I can't, I'm sorry. Adios, my friend. Why is that different? Would you support doing that? I agree. Better look next Gilgul guy.
Yeah. But I have, I'm not going to tell the story right now, but there's one to be told.
Okay. So we're going to, so that's area number one. That's the first thing I want to discuss, which would be stem cell donations, which would be kidney donations. And the question is, really, depending, it could be that stem cells, one could argue perhaps, would be obligatory. Kidneys would be a mitzvah, but not obligatory, and
life preservers obligatory.
So why
and livers at one point at least might have been usher even.
So why would
that would be the spectrum, because it all depends on what the risk to the donor is.
Now, there are people who have a very very low pain threshold, or they're deathly afraid of needles.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be an emotional trauma for them to give stem cells or blood in that case. So even though there's no risk to them,
hypnosis.
There's no risk to them, but they're very much afraid to do it. And so are they still obligated? Are they over on the mitzvah of not doing it?
If they can't do it, they can't do it. But, you know, I think, you know, particularly in the great state of Colorado, there's things that we can do to help the person get over anxiety.
So why are we obligated to give blood?
Well, are we or aren't we?
Aren't
we? Well, so again, the difference with blood is a concept of cholo bifaneinu. When you give blood, there's no person that's waiting on the other side that we know about. There's no person who needs your blood. It's the bigger picture. So that already makes it different.
I see. And what about a lung?
What about a lung?
We can't do that. You can't?
No.
You have to die.
All the time is how many?
Immune tissue.
No, for cystic fibrosis patients, they will take two donors and take a right lung from donor A, a left lung from donor B in transplant.
And the donors get by with one lung?
The donors get by with one lung. No people who have done it.
And
good lung life.
And the quality of life for the people with one lung is generally okay.
They're not
going to
run a marathon.
I was going to say, that's my next question. How many 14ers do they climb at that point?
Well, you don't have to do
14ers. Okay.
So you can't do a lung.
That's what the doctors say. As I said, I 100% defer. Next area. Let's see if we can do a little bit more here. So the next issue is corneal transplants, right? A cornea can last for some time after death. So therefore, a person could die, be dead l'chol adeus, be really dead, and still you can go take the cornea. Is there any problem with that? Right? And then you could take this person's cornea and put it for someone else. There are three potential problems, right? The first thing is...
The receiver is not a sekones nefashos.
Well, yeah, well, what's the isser in taking it? Okay.
Again, desecrating the body.
Right, desecrating the body.
Well,
right.
Do you leave it on the body?
What?
It's a donation.
Right. I'm saying you take the cornea when the person dies. And
after the person's dead.
Okay, it doesn't stay with the body until you have somebody to give it to.
No, I think there are eye banks that collect this.
Right. That's what I
So again, right? Cholofenenu.
Well, yeah, the question is, well, there's two things. One is there could be a cholofenenu.
Right.
There could be, right? And the other
same
one...
Same thing with blood, by the way. Sometimes you're giving blood specifically...
Correct.
...to your family member.
Right. Every so often they'll say, we're looking for a
negative blood.
Right. You know, as I tell people, my wife's blood type is A plus, mine is O minus. But psychologically, I'm getting over it. I'm working my way through it. So the first issue is the desecration, right? That's a Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says that when it's actually referring to the pasuk, when a person is put to death, they are hung for some time, but they have to be taken down relatively quickly. Why? Because it's an embarrassment. You're not allowed to desecrate the body. You can't do anything that's going to be a bizayon to the body, anything that's going to be an embarrassment to the body. Interesting, the Gemara goes so far in Chulin as to ask the following question. Right? This is discussing autopsies. So let's say a person was stabbed to death. I did it. Sorry. And now... Now they're trying me, capital case, and I demand that I would like to have an autopsy done on the dead body because I think the place where I stabbed him, he in fact had cancer there. And it would have killed him anyhow.
You sped up the dead.
What?
Why not make
killed
it
the dead guy.
Why don't you say you stabbed him in a non-lethal area,
right.
Died of some other cause.
Right.
So
what I'd actually do it. This is just like a case. I'll be clear. It was not clear.
She's right. Calling the police right now.
Washington Heights is self-defense.
That's it. Rav Kahana Omar, Asi Mehargis, Nefesh and Rachmana Katle. So the idea is that the Gemara discusses this and it says that no, unless there's a real reason you can't do what's called Nivel Hames, you can't desecrate the body. So you see the removing of a part of a body would be desecration. This is a potential problem of the removal of the cornea. That's number one. Number two is you're not allowed to get any benefit from a dead body. That's in the Shulchan Aruch, number five. Meis bein ove kochavim bein Yisrael v'tachrichav asurim b'hanoah. You cannot get any benefit out of a dead body, Jewish or not.
But all the cadavers are used in medical school.
That's
one thing at a time.
Right? So that's what he says. The Pisrei Tshuva interestingly comments, he quotes in opinion number six, that not everyone agrees on that statement that this applies both to Jewish and non-Jewish bodies. Ayin Balatur, Meshem Maharit, Verhetav, sorry, Meshem Maharit, Vayin Tshuvas Avnei Shom, Shel, the Meis Yisrael Osir Bahano Min HaTorah, Aval Meis Ovei Kochavim Osir Mid Rabbanan. There's a difference. Yes, he agrees that you cannot get benefit from anybody, Jewish or non-Jewish. However, when it comes to Jews, it's biblical. When it comes to non-Jews, it's rabbinic. So if somebody is sick, but not life-threatening, they say take a bone from a dead body in order that for some medical reason, or take part of the shrouds, which are also generally not. You're allowed to take it from a non-Jew. So, that would be number two, potentially getting benefit from a dead body, which may get unclear if it's biblically prohibited in both cases, perhaps it's only rabbinic in the case of a non-Jew. That's number two. Problem number three, the Gemara tells us, is that when somebody dies, there is a commandment to bury the person. By taking out the cornea, it's not getting buried. Those are the three potential. Now, obviously, if this was a matter of life and death, all three of these would fall by the wayside. Right? Obviously, it's a discussion, but the general assumption is if there's a specific case that we need to do an autopsy for, two people come down with Legionnaire's disease, we have no idea what it is, the first guy dies, our only hope to save the second guy is to do an autopsy on the first guy to see what this disease is doing, we would allow it, right? So obviously, if this is a matter of life and death, we don't care about that. Similarly, getting benefit from a dead body, matter of life and death, we would absolutely allow it. Matter of life and death, we wouldn't bury the person. So those three are all for sure.
But cornea is not a matter of life and death.
But, however, cornea, arguably, is not a matter of life and death. Blind people live also.
Even commits.
What? Oh, so let's discuss that. That is a question. That a blind person is considered like that. Where do we have that in the Chumash? Anybody? Girls, what am I paying tuition for? What?
The pressure's on.
Where do we see in the Chumash that a blind person is considered dead? It's not in the Chumash. Rashi quotes it.
Oh, we've made
lost
English. No. Should not put it in front of a dead person? How's he going to trip?
It doesn't mean that.
That's like someone once asked me if you put it.
The answer,
yes. No. Oh, come on. There's more famous blind people than Shimshon. Right, Yitzhak was blind, correct. And Rashi and Vayigash says, based on that Tsuma is considered like mace. Because Yaakov refers to Yitzhak, I believe, as Elokei Avi Yitzhak. So, you only refer to Elokei after the person has passed away. So he was blind. That's what it says.
So is that where you're saying it comes from?
Right, so that's
the Gemara tells us that a destitute person who's very, very poor is also considered dead.
Correct, and we see that from
Yaakov.
That's Yaakov. Yaakov tried that shtick, right? It worked well for him with his nephew.
Yeah,
right. Also, we see it from Ki Mesu Kol Anoshim and Vachshim Es Nafshecha by Dustin Vaviram.
Say you can go back.
Someone who has Saras is considered like dead.
He could go back to Mitzrayim because if people wanted to kill him, were dead.
Right. So we have this. So based on that, there's a famous tshuva by Rav Unterman. Rav Unterman was the former chief rabbi of originally Tel Aviv and then Israel.
What?
50s, I believe. So his piece is actually a very long piece, and therefore I quote the Sri Deish, which summarizes it. So the question was asked to the Sri Deish. That's a mashal imutu laharchiv or shall ayin mace al or shall adam iver kaderefu also. Are you allowed to take the skin from the eye of a dead person to put it on a living person who's blind so he could see? Zachruni ki agon marino rav isur Yehuda untermin rava rashi betel aviv hello lahatir kifi a rashi bezichroni nega b'choma kom shehizker. He said, I don't have it in front of me, I remember it. Basically, he has three reasons. One is pikuach nefesh. Now he mentions the idea that a blind person is considered dead, but he also says blind people can walk into traffic. So therefore, on a less spiritual, more practical realm, right? That's number one.
I don't know.
What if they only blind one eye?
What?
Is that?
Please, we're going to get to that.
One eye?
We'll get to that.
I don't understand the argument.
The argument is that eyesight's a matter of life and death because blind people can walk in traffic.
Okay.
You can take a long walk off a short pier, as the saying goes.
But my question is, I thought you're saying people who are blind are like dead.
Correct. So, yeah, these are again,
alternate reasons.
Right.
All right. Okay. I'm with you.
That's one.
Life in danger.
Got it.
Two is, Maharbi Rishonim ain't Isser Bahana Me'atara. Second possibility is what we said earlier, the fact that you can't use a body part, that's only rabbinic. If it's rabbinic, we said, for any type of refuah, it's allowed. right? So in this case, okay, so it's not a matter of life and death, but clearly it's a matter of medical necessity. The Tam Shlishi ki baser hames also rakos manchuah hu hames. He said that a part of the body has to be buried. It's considered part of the body as long as it's part of it. Once it's been removed, it's not a part of it anymore. But now that I take it, I put it on a living body. It's not dead. You know, it's not dead, right? I take a heart of a dead man and I put it into a man who needs a heart, or a woman, right? Then it's you don't have to bury it now. I'm sorry, I have to bury you. I got good news and bad news. The good news is there's been no rejection. It's good. On the other hand, you know,
bad news is we have to bury it.
Bad news is you better get some good reading material.
Incidentally, like the amputated limb. I think the minhag in Eretz Yisrael is to bury it with the mace.
Correct. And in America as well.
Which means?
There's a person, unfortunately, a diabetic who I was in the hospital, and they had to amputate a foot. So I walk in there, and I figure out the guy's in good spirits. He says, "What can I tell you? I already got one foot in the grave." He actually said it to me. Yeah, okay, I guess he's taking it well. How about them Yankees? You know, so he points out that all these arguments are not ironclad. Valkulam yesh pircha. And he goes, I'll leave it out, but each step by step he rejects them all. Mikol makom yesh makom lahatir. Even though I don't necessarily buy any of the logic, he says, I still think it's okay. He likes the idea that, you know, there's danger, not because spiritually a blind person is considered dead, because there's real danger. You could fall. You could run into something. So therefore, so since a lot of other people say it's allowed, etc., I'll go along with it. A lot of people write about this. This was very big around 50 years ago, this question. Among the sources I was reading today was the Kobol on Hilchos Avelos written by?
Jack Greenwald's father.
Jack, right? Most people call him Rabbi Kusi El Yehuda Greenwald, but we know him fondly as Jack Greenwald's father. Has, if anyone's interested, has a few pages on this very issue.
Do we pay the skin after we move up?
No, we don't. There is a minhag to put it in ashes. But has nothing to do with burial. Rav Elazar Waldenberg writes about this as well. So he is not as excited about it. He said, "Ein lahatir shel hotzas ayim mimeis letzorech chole ki im shel meis akum." He will only allow it if the cornea comes from a non-Jew. Why would that be based on? Well, that's what we saw earlier. Right? That's only rabbinic. We said rabbinic, you're allowed to do it. So therefore, that in that case, Rav Moshe Feinstein, you should know, sounds that way as well. The opinion of Rav Moshe Feinstein seems to be that you can do a corneal transplant, but it should be from a non-Jewish cadaver, specifically. So that would be the story with that. So this is the second area, where basically you're taking it from a dead person. There are potential problems. All the potential problems would fall by the wayside very quickly if this was a matter of life and death. There's just a question, would I consider blindness a matter of life and death? Right, we don't really consider blind people dead. We count blind people in minyanim, right? You know, blind people are people too. We treat them with the greatest dignity.
Their heirs aren't claiming all their possessions.
Right, we don't bury them.
That's important.
Right, etc. So again, it's not a great argument to say that a blind person is dead. Now, of course, also he writes as well that he only will allow this if this person is blind in both eyes. Right. The person who is blind in one eye, that's a whole different story, right? That person might not have the greatest depth perception.
He's not going to run into a car.
Right. No more likely than the rest of us. So that's the story. So that's number two. Number three, I'm just going to mention quickly. I put down here a news article from today.
Right.
It says, boy who lost hands to infection gets double hand transplant. Right? 8-year-old boy lost his hands and feet to suicide, has become the youngest patient to receive a double hand transplant, surgeon said Tuesday. Right? So that was yesterday.
What's the issue of, talk about a heart or lung transplant? Lots of issues with that.
So again, well, it's the same issue as hands, believe it or not. Right? In order, I'm not an expert, my understanding is in order to get a hand, It has to be off, basically, as the same shelf life as a heart or lung. Would that be a fair statement?
I would imagine. It's an operation I've never done, but yeah.
Right. Right, but I assume that the issues in the hand transplant is going to be the same as in the heart and the same in the lung. Right, meaning that it's got to be fresh, as we say. In fact, I got into trouble. My daughters will confirm this. Last year we were packing up to go back from Denver to New York, and we had more stuff than we had suitcases, so we had to so we were going to buy another suitcase. I said, you know what, I'll just buy one of those containers in Target, one of those plastic bins. And I'll tape it up. So I went to check in the airport, and I went, and they said, what's in the container?
Exactly.
I said, kidneys. And they
didn't laugh.
Not even a little bit. My
I
wife...
Said guns. I don't know.
They had a very similar facial expression as my wife had, actually. I think it was worth it.
So they just x-rayed it, yeah.
What?
Did they just x-ray it?
No, they did a mammogram.
Thank you. So the question we have with hands, it's all the eccentric, is how do you get it? That is the big question. The big question is, you're going to have somebody where the blood is flowing, right? The heart is beating, and or has been doing it pretty recently, and the other hand is dead. Now, are there such people in the world? That's a discussion beyond tonight's discussion. There has been an awful lot of ink spilled on this. There are, I forget, articles, there have been books written on the topic already at this point. And it all comes down to the question of the determination of death. Is brain death basically considered death or not? Brain death, brain stem death, chronic vegetative state, etc. It used to be back in the day. So basically, what does it take for a person to be alive? The person has to have brain function, the person has to be breathing, the person has to have the heart function and circulation. And usually, you lose one of them, the other two fall by the wayside. A person stops breathing, there's no oxygen that gets to the brain shuts down, everything else shuts down, right? The blood's not pumping, the heart's not working, oxygen doesn't get to the brain, right? That goes. And, you know, if the brain stops functioning, well, then the heart stops functioning, and etc. Usually the lag time between any one of them going down was de minimis, right? If a person, when one of them stopped, if you waited a half hour and nothing kicked up again, there's a pretty good chance that the condom should get out of the room. That was the long and short of it. Nowadays, through
machines,
the wonder or the misery of technology, depending how you're looking at it, right? The time that one of these stops, for example, brain function, to the time that the other thing stopped could be weeks, months, in certain cases.
Brain death, they usually begin to deteriorate.
What?
With brain
death, I saw a study today, I was doing my research, they said they had 145 cases of people with brain death, of which 7 of them made it 6 months.
It's not the usual.
Right, okay, that's 5%.
This case is yeah, different than the heart transplant case.
Okay.
Right? So say the patient, the donor is brain dead, mm-hmm, and they're going to donate a heart.
So and then they're going to be
really dead. If you take off their hands,
right,
they're not going to be dead.
Correct.
They're not going to be.
On the other hand, Me'idoch Nisa. Right. Right. One is, again, removing someone's hands is halachically problematic as well.
Right.
Not as problematic as removing their heart,
yes,
admittedly. On the other hand, the upside, a person can live without hands, right? The upside of what the receiver is getting is going to be much more valuable in the heart than it will in the hands. So you know, and that's really, it cuts both ways.
No pun intended.
Cuts both
ways. Right. So in terms of, what we discussed at length, the idea of kidneys and corneas, those are really the easier of the cases. When it comes to the cases of vital organs, even non-vital organs, but in the case where they have to be taken from a basically live donor, that's the bigger issue. And that's the issue where so much has been written about. there are different opinions on both sides. I think there is a majority opinion in this.
The country that supplies us with oil or used to, they do it all the time.
Right, but I don't think they give them to anybody. maybe if we ask them nicely. So, right, so again, that's beyond the scope of tonight, and we're going to leave it. Yes?
I was going to say the one thing we didn't really talk about that I've dealt with in organ donation, although I'm all for it and whatever, is with the GOSES, how you're not allowed to...
Correct. Yeah, so the issue, that's all related to the issue of whether we call it brain death or brain stem death or chronic vegetative state, et cetera. What is that person's status? Right? There's three possibilities: alive, dead, something in between. Right? Right. The something in between is GOSES. Right? Right. There's halachic status of someone who's within 72 hours of death. And at that point, you basically can't touch the person because any bit of touching, moving, could potentially hasten the death. Right? So,
or prevent it.
What?
Or prevent it.
Right. Okay. There's nothing wrong with preventing death. We're all for preventing death. Right? We're hastening death, though, we're not as into. So that's what the Shulchan Aruch talks about, the concept of goses. And a lot of people think that that's where it is. So, but a goses is kachay l'chol dover. The person is considered absolutely alive, right? And the only thing, if anything, the fact that the guy is half dead, if you're going to call a goses dead, makes things worse. If someone's fully alive, so you can poke them, you can prod them, you can do tests on them, right? You can give them apnea tests, you can do whatever you want to see, you know, how much oxygen, etc. But the person's half dead, you're not allowed to do that. So in fact, it's a little counterintuitive, but the opinion, which is held by many people, that the person has the status of goses, makes things worse in terms of practically. All right, thank you very much.